Let's take a trip down the rabbit hole, shall we?
DevLearn, the Woodstock of learning geeks, the yoga retreat of learning professionals. This podcast is created using a curated stack of resources shared by a discerning learning leader and created as a podcast using AI for you, the humans. Enjoy.
Welcome back for another deep dive. This time, you sent us a pretty cool mix of stuff, actually, all about learning and development, marketing, and how to make those two worlds, well, you know, work better together. We'll dig into some stats, unpack some big ideas, and hopefully find some things you can actually use.
You know, it's really interesting looking at all these sources. The learner is right at the center. It's almost like we're moving away from just generic training and towards something more personalized, kind of like a marketing campaign, but just for you.
Oh, okay. I like that, the marketing angle. So where do we even begin?
Well, how about with a little experiment? Imagine the words, feel away, red, green. Pretty easy, right?
Yeah.
Now try this. Red, blue, green. But don't read the word. Just name the ink color. A bit harder.
Yeah, definitely had to think about that one.
That's the Stroop test. It shows how our brains just naturally prioritize certain types of information. We're drawn to words, right? So ignoring that and focusing on just the color, well, it takes more effort. And, you know, what's really wild is that one of the sources, a book called Thinking Fast and Slow, points out that a huge part of our subconscious mind is shaped by the time we're six.
6 years old. Whoa. So the way we learn as adults is influenced by stuff that happened like way back then.
It really is. So how would you design a training program differently if you were teaching a six-year-old? You'd probably use a ton of visuals, storytelling, maybe even songs. And guess what? A lot of that stuff actually works for adults too. It just makes learning more fun.
That makes sense. So how do we actually tap into that, the whole intuitive brain thing, when we're creating learning for adults?
Well, the source material lays out six key principles. They actually make a pretty easy acronym, PERSONAL. Personal, contrastable, tangible, memorable, visual, emotional. Let's start with personal. Our brains are always asking, what's in it for me? So generic info just doesn't cut it.
Right, like those boring PowerPoint slides with bullet points. Yeah. They go in one ear and right out the other.
Exactly. We need to connect the learning directly to what the learner needs and wants to achieve.
Got it. Make it relevant.
Yeah.
Okay, what about contrastable? What's that all about?
Contrastable is all about highlighting differences. Our brains, they just naturally notice things that stand out.
So using things like, oh, I don't know, bold text, surprising stats, or even just changing your tone of voice.
You got it. Anything to disrupt that pattern and make them pay attention.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense in learning design. What about tangible?
Tangible. That's about giving our brains something concrete. Instead of just abstract ideas, we need real-world examples, hands-on stuff, maybe simulations, even stories.
Stories are always good. Okay, memorable. How do we make it stick?
Well, a lot of that goes back to the first few principles. If it's personal, if it uses contrast, and if it connects to emotions, we're way more likely to remember it.
So it's not just cramming information in. It's about actually, like, making people feel something.
You got it. Now, visual, that one's pretty straightforward. We're visual creatures. Images are processed so much faster than text, so visuals are key.
And lastly, emotional. We touched on it a bit, but why are emotions so important for learning?
Well, think of emotions as your brain's highlighter. They tell us what's important, what's worth remembering. When something connects to our emotions, it becomes so much more meaningful.
Instead of just telling people something, we need to make them feel something. That's powerful.
Exactly. And that actually brings us to a pretty cool concept that keeps coming up in these sources, learner personas.
Learner personas. Okay, tell me more. What are they and why should we care?
Imagine creating like character sketches of your ideal learners, not real people, but based on real insights about your audience. Personas help us truly understand who our learners are, their needs, preferences, their pain points, even their learning style.
I see the marketing connection again. It's about knowing your audience, sending the right message to the right people.
Exactly. Just like marketing needs to know its audience, good learning design needs to know who's learning.
So do we create a persona for every single person in our training program?
Oh, no, not at all. You want to aim for maybe 3 to 5 personas that represent the key segments of your audience. The source material actually gives a great example. Apima, a 26-year-old administrative assistant in London.
Okay, tell me about Apima. What's her story?
Well, she loves running and reading, prefers to learn early in the morning, and she's a working mom, busy schedule, so she really needs flexible training options. Apima is feeling a bit overwhelmed by her workload and doesn't feel like she has time to learn new skills.
Wow, it's like I can picture her already.
That's exactly what personas do. They help us design learning that really connects with people.
Okay, so I'm starting to think about my own learners. What questions should I ask to create these profiles?
Think demographics, professional background, learning preferences, even personal interests. What are their job roles, their goals? What are their tech skills like? When do they prefer to learn? What formats do they like?
It's like we're writing characters for a story. Okay, I love this.
And once you have your personas, you can really tailor that learning design.
Okay, so we've got our brains fired up. We've got our learner personas ready to go. What's next?
Well, it's time to talk about writing. And I'm going to start with a bit of a bold statement. Nobody actually wants to read anything.
Okay, maybe a little harsh, but I get it. I can't tell you how many times I've zoned out reading a training manual.
We've all been there. Yeah. But the good news is there are things we can do to make our writing more, well, you know, engaging. These sources actually highlight some principles. They call them the Ursher principles.
Sure, I'm all ears. What Sure stand for?
Sure stands for simple, useful, resonate, easy to skim.
Let's start with simple. Our brains are wired for simplicity.
Yeah, if something is too complicated, I just tune out.
That's why readability is a good indicator of how learnable something is. One of the sources mentions something called the Flesch Reading Ease Score, which basically measures how easy it is to understand the piece of text. I've heard of that, but I never thought to apply it to, like, learning materials. How does that work?
Well, it uses a formula that looks at sentence length, the number of syllables per word, that kind of thing. Higher score, easier to read. And what we're learning is that if it's easy to read, it's usually easier to learn, too.
So short sentences, plain language. Ditch the jargon.
Exactly. Now, useful. Just like marketing focuses on solving customer problems, good learning content needs to address the learner's specific needs and challenges.
So show them what's in it for them. How will this help them do their job better?
Exactly. We need to answer that what's in it for me question right up front.
Okay. I'm seeing how all these principles connect. Simple makes it accessible. Useful makes it relevant. Mm-hmm. What about resonate?
Resonate is about connecting with those emotions again. Emotionally resonant content, that's what makes it stick.
I've heard it said that people might forget what you said, but they'll never forget how you made them feel.
That's it. We got to tap into those emotions.
Okay, and lastly, easy to skim. Why is that so important? Shouldn't people read every single word?
Well, ideally, yes. But let's be real. People are busy. They're distracted. We're bombarded with information all the time. We need to make it easy for them to quickly find what they need.
Okay, so how do we make it skimmable?
Think clear headings, short paragraphs, bullet points, visuals, anything that breaks up those big walls of text.
It's like a writing masterclass.
And speaking of capturing attention, remember that invisible gorilla experiment?
You mean the one where you're so focused on counting basketball passes that you completely miss the gorilla walking across the screen?
Exactly. It shows just how easy it is to miss something important if it doesn't grab our attention.
So how do we make sure our learning content doesn't become the invisible gorilla?
Think like a marketer. Our brains are programmed to pay attention to just a few things: relevance, novelty, and emotion. We already covered relevance with useful and making sure content is targeted.
Right, right. So how do we create novelty? How do we keep it fresh and interesting?
Well, think about unexpected formats, interactive elements, humor, maybe a change in perspective, anything that disrupts that pattern and makes people think, ooh, that's interesting.
And visuals and stories can help with that.
Absolutely. Visuals are huge for capturing attention.
And we can't forget those emotions. Mm. I'm sensing a theme here. But seriously, how do emotions fit in?
They're the glue that makes everything stick. Emotions connect us to information, make it more meaningful. And you know what? Studies show that good design can increase comprehension and engagement by a lot.
That makes total sense. Something looks good, I'm more likely to pay attention.
And here's another interesting tidbit. We form impressions about things within milliseconds.
Milliseconds. Wow, that's fast. So we decide if something's worth our time before we even realize it.
It's all subconscious. Those first impressions really matter.
Okay, the pressure's on. Sounds like we have a very short window to make a good impression.
It's true. But the key is to be intentional and keep your learner personas in mind.
Right, right. Would Apima like this? Would Bert find this engaging?
That's it. And this brings us to a really important concept, moving beyond those one-and-done learning events. We need to embrace the power of learning campaigns.
Ooh, campaigns. Now we're talking marketing. I like where this is going.
It's about shifting from thinking of learning as an event to thinking of it as a journey.
Okay, I'm ready to embark on this learning journey. Where do we start?
Well, these sources introduce this idea of the five moments of need.
Five moments of need. What are they?
They are: one, learn something for the first time; two, learn more of something; three, apply and refine what you've learned; four, adjust to change; and five, react to failure.
That pretty much covers everything, huh?
It does. It opens up so many possibilities for delivering content.
This feels similar to the marketing funnel idea. We're nurturing learners throughout their journey.
You got it. Just like a marketing funnel uses different tactics, a learning campaign can use a variety of methods to support learners at each of those moments of need.
I like this. Can you give me an example, a real-world scenario?
Sure. Let's say you're rolling out a new software system.
Oh, yeah. Those can be tough. So much to learn in such a short time.
Right. But instead of cramming everything into one big training right before the rollout, we can start weeks or even months in advance.
Okay, I like where you're going with this. Tell me more.
Well, maybe you start with a short animated video, you know, something fun and engaging to get people excited.
Like a movie trailer, getting everyone hyped up for the main event.
Perfect analogy. Then, maybe a week or two before the rollout, you release some interactive job aids that focus on specific tasks.
So they can start getting familiar with the system in practice before they actually have to use it.
Exactly. And once the system is live, you have things like tooltips, FAQs, a knowledge base all ready to go.
This is great. It's like providing the right support at the right time.
And that actually leads us to our next big topic, building learning communities.
Communities. I'm a big fan of shared learning. It's so much more engaging than trying to learn alone.
You know, a study found that 52% of employees feel like they're not reaching their full potential because they don't have enough development opportunities.
Wow, that's more than half.
And get this, organizations with strong learning cultures have 24% higher engagement and retention rates.
Okay, that's a big deal. It shows that investing in learning is good for everyone, the employees and the company.
Exactly. So how do we build these communities? Where do we even begin?
Okay, give me the steps. What makes a great learning community?
Well, one of the sources suggests starting with a group of community champions.
I like that term. Like cheerleaders for the learning community.
Exactly. People who are passionate about learning will spread the word. Next, you define your target audience. Who are you trying to reach? What are the benefits of joining this community?
So it needs a clear purpose. What's the value proposition?
Right. And then it's about logistics. What kind of activities will you have? How often will you meet? How do you keep people engaged? They even recommend assigning a mover and shaker.
I like that. Someone to keep the energy going.
Exactly. And then, of course, there's the design of the community space itself. It should be a place people actually want to hang out, learn from each other, and share ideas.
It's like a clubhouse for learners.
Right. And finally, how are you going to promote it? How will you spread the word and get people excited to join?
Back to those marketing skills again. It really is all connected.
It is. And the source actually shares a case study, the Global Campus Community.
What's special about them?
They offer a great mix, webinars, tutorials, articles, roundtables, even a chat feature. It's a vibrant community.
Sounds amazing. Yeah. So much to explore. Which leads me to something I've been thinking about. What about AI? How does that fit into all of this?
That's a great question. And these sources have some interesting ideas. AI could really shake things up in the learning community world.
Okay, I'm intrigued. How so?
Well, imagine AI curating resources, sifting through tons of information and recommending exactly what you need based on your goals.
That's like having a personal librarian. That would be so helpful.
Right. Or how about AI-powered moderation and facilitation? Think how much easier it would be to manage large online communities, especially global ones with different time zones.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good point.
And then there's language translation. AI could make learning accessible to so many more people.
Talk about creating a more inclusive learning experience.
Exactly. And then there are things like AI virtual assistants, answering questions, providing personalized coaching, guiding learners through their journey.
An AI mentor. Wow, that's pretty incredible.
And we can't forget about those smart notification systems. AI can send reminders about new content, deadlines, even connect you with other people.
It sounds like AI could personalize every part of learning. But what about the human element? Are we going to be replaced by robots?
That's the big question, right? The thing to remember is AI is a tool. It's not about replacing human connection.
So finding the right balance between technology and the human touch. What do the sources say about that?
One of them emphasizes design thinking when we're building AI-powered learning solutions.
Oh, design thinking. Can you remind me what that is?
It's basically problem solving, but with people at the center. It starts with empathizing with the user, and there's lots of experimenting and testing to make sure it meets their needs.
Okay, yeah. We don't want to build something super advanced that nobody can figure out how to use.
Exactly. And speaking of putting all this into practice, one of the sources has this really cool example, the sales lab.
A sales lab. That sounds intense.
It is. It's this immersive, hands-on experience to help salespeople develop key skills.
Okay, I'm interested. What makes it so successful?
First of all, it's a safe space. You can try new things, get feedback, learn from mistakes without being judged.
Safe spaces are so important for learning. We all need to feel comfortable making mistakes.
Absolutely. And the sales lab is all about real-world outcomes. Participants know what skills they're developing and how it will help them do their jobs better.
So it's not just theory, it's practical.
Exactly. Collaboration is also a big part.
Yeah.
Participants work in teams, share ideas, learn from each other.
Building that sense of community.
Yes. They also get to practice their skills in realistic scenarios, get feedback from experts, and refine their techniques.
So it's not just about reading about sales techniques. They're actually doing it.
That's it. And then they leave with clear next steps, a plan for how to apply what they've learned.
Like graduating with a mini MBA in sales.
And the results speak for themselves.
Okay, don't leave me hanging. What were the results?
Get ready for this. 97% of participants earned their sales lab credential by the deadline. Talk about engagement.
Wow, that's impressive. They were really invested in the learning.
And listen to this. 60% of the salespeople who completed the lab and earned their credential actually saw their average deal size increase the following quarter.
Wow, a direct link between learning and business results. That's the dream.
And the overall improvement in average deal size across all reps was 6%.
That's huge.
And get this, the revenue gain from that improved deal size was 8 times greater than the cost of the lab.
8 times. That's an incredible return on investment.
It really shows the power of investing in practical learning and development.
Okay, you've sold me. The sales lab is amazing.
It is. It's a great example of how to put all these principles into practice.
I'm feeling inspired. I want to build a sales lab for my team.
That's the spirit. But hold on, there's one more source that's full of valuable insights. It's an article all about aligning learning and development with a marketing mindset.
Oh, yeah. I think we in L&D could learn a lot from marketing. What were some of the takeaways?
This article really pushes for embracing that marketing mindset when it comes to L&D. And it breaks it down into 5 key areas. The intuitive brain, learner personas, writing that clicks, grabbing attention, and learning campaigns.
Sounds familiar. It's like a review of everything we've talked about so far.
It reinforces a lot of the same concepts, but it also adds some tactics. For instance, it suggests using something called brain writing to come up with ideas. And then to choose the best ones, using penny voting.
Penny voting. Okay, what's that?
It's a really fun way to get everyone involved in the decision-making process. Everyone gets a handful of pennies, and they literally vote for their favorite ideas.
I love it.
And once you've got those ideas narrowed down, the article suggests using a prioritization grid to see which ones are feasible and have the most potential impact.
So strategic planning here.
Exactly. Another big point, the importance of feedback. The article says we need to have feedback loops at multiple levels, not just from supervisors, but peers and team members, too.
That's a good point. It creates a more supportive environment, especially when people are working remotely.
Right. And finally, the article says we need to be okay with experimenting and adapting as we go.
So don't be afraid to try something new, see what works, and adjust accordingly.
Exactly. It's all about that growth mindset. And they actually include a really cool case study that shows this in action, a redesigned digital onboarding playbook.
A digital onboarding playbook. I'm all ears.
This comes from the University of South Florida's Innovative Education Digital Learning Team. It's a complete transformation of their onboarding process.
So they're onboarding new learning designers.
Yep. And they created this 3-phase process that's really collaborative, personalized, and grounded in research.
Okay, 3 phases. Tell me more.
Phase one is all about setting the stage. There's an initial meeting, a comprehensive onboarding handbook, all that good stuff.
Setting expectations, providing all the info, making sure everyone's on the same page.
Exactly. Phase two is about building skills. They use Asana, a project management tool, to deliver tutorials, assign tasks, and track progress.
Hands-on learning. Love it.
And phase three is all about ongoing mentorship and shadowing.
There's that human element.
It's so important. New learning designers get paired up with experienced mentors, you know, for guidance and support.
I love that they balance the structure with that personal connection.
One of the most impressive things about this program is their feedback system.
Feedback is crucial for growth.
And they have this multi-layered system with peers, mentors, and project managers all providing feedback.
So it's coming from all directions, not just top down.
Exactly. They've found it's especially helpful in a remote work environment.
It makes sense, trying to build that community and support even when people aren't physically together.
And the results have been incredible. New hires are more confident, connected, and better prepared for their roles.
Wow, they've really set people up for success.
And the best part, they're already planning future improvement.
Love it. Always growing, always learning.
Exactly. And finally, we have a source that dives into something that's a challenge for everyone in L&D measurement.
Ugh, yes, measurement. It can be such a struggle to show the value of our work.
I know, right? It comes up all the time. But this source, Making Measurement Easier, gives some really helpful guidance.
Okay, I'm ready to make measurement easier. What are the key takeaways?
Well, first, don't try to measure everything.
Wait, really? I always thought I should collect as much data as possible.
That's a common trap. It leads to analysis paralysis. Be strategic. Focus on the metrics that matter most.
Okay, so how do we choose what to measure?
The source gives us two key questions. One, is your goal to just share information or to create change?
Okay, yeah. What you measure depends on what you're trying to achieve.
Right. And question two, what specific change do you want to see?
So get crystal clear about your goals and then choose the right metrics to track them.
You got it. And another point, you need to measure both in the classroom and on the job.
Not just how well people learn during training, but how they actually use it afterward.
Exactly. And then there's strategy versus tactics.
Strategy versus tactics. Let me guess. Strategy is the big picture. Tactics are the details.
You nailed it. The source says strategy is what you are doing and why you are doing it.
So your overall goal and the reasons behind it.
And tactics are the actions you'll take to get there.
Strategy is the why. Tactics are the how.
Exactly. The source says it's super important to create a measurement strategy before you even start designing your training.
So we're thinking about measurement from the beginning, not just at the end.
Right. And one of the best tools is to create a hypothesis.
A hypothesis. Like in science class.
It's a great way to clarify your goals and figure out what data you need to test your assumptions.
So you're saying if we do X, we expect to see Y, and then we gather data to see if Y actually happens.
You got it. And the source gives a great example. Let's say you're creating a leadership training program. Your hypothesis could be something like, if we improve delegation skills, we'll see a decrease in hours worked per week, decreased stress levels, increased optimism, and ultimately increased retention of new managers.
Wow, that's really comprehensive. It covers both the short-term and long-term goals.
And it gives you that roadmap for what you need to measure.
I love it. It takes the guesswork out of measurement.
And speaking of alignment.
Hold on. Before we move on, remind me what we're aligning here.
Everything. The training goals with business goals, the measurement strategy with the training goals, but most importantly, our learning and development initiatives with what our learners actually need.
So it's all about creating that big picture where everything works together.
You got it. And the source uses this great visual, a pie chart divided into different departments, L&D, marketing, customer success, product, sales, manager support, even policies.
Breaking down those silos, getting everyone on the same page.
Exactly. And the source makes this great point. When you have all those departments working together, it increases the predictability of success.
Predictable learning success. I like the sound of that.
Me too. And speaking of alignment, one of the sources we're looking at has this fascinating perspective on bridging the gap between learning and development and marketing.
Okay, bridging the gap between those two. That's interesting. I'm ready to hear more.
It's this book, The Little Black Book of Marketing and L&D. It's full of practical advice.
Ooh, a little black book of secrets. I'm excited.
The author makes a strong argument for bringing that marketing mindset into the world of L&D.
Okay, I'm curious. What does that look like in practice? How do we add that marketing magic to our learning programs?
Well, this book focuses on five key areas: engaging learners with a marketing funnel, using personas to design learner-centered experiences, the marketing mix, specifically the four P's, content strategy, and moving away from one-time events to a campaign-based approach to learning.
Wow. A lot to unpack there. It's like a crash course in marketing for learning professionals.
Exactly. And it all starts with understanding the learner's journey.
Okay, let's talk about that journey. Where do we begin?
The book really stresses using a marketing funnel to engage learners from start to finish.
We've talked about funnels before, but remind me, what's the basic idea again?
A marketing funnel is basically a way to visualize the customer journey. It shows how people go from not even knowing about your product to becoming a loyal customer.
So are you saying we apply that same concept to learning?
You got it. Instead of trying to make a sale, our goal is to take learners through a series of stages that eventually lead them to mastering a new skill or changing their behavior.
So taking them from, I need to learn this, to, I can confidently use this in my work.
Yes. And just like a marketing funnel uses different strategies at each stage, a learning funnel uses a variety of techniques to keep learners engaged and supported along the way.
Okay, I like that. It's a roadmap, a strategic way to design learning.
And the book gives us some examples of what this might look like. Let's say you're creating a health and safety training.
Okay, a topic everyone needs to know.
Right. So at the awareness stage, you might use something like humor or eye-catching visuals to get people's attention, make them curious.
I could see a funny meme working well there, or even a short animated video.
Then at the consideration stage, you could offer training that's personalized to their specific job role. How does health and safety actually apply to their day-to-day work?
Make it relevant to their experience.
Right. And then the conversion stage. This is where the main training happens. You might use a mix of methods, webinars, exercises, group discussions, you name it. Just keep it engaging.
And I'm guessing that loyalty and advocacy stage is where we see the payoff learners applying what they learned and even sharing it with others.
Exactly. And throughout each stage, we're collecting data, tracking progress to see what's working and what's not.
Okay. I really appreciate the data-driven approach. It's all about making informed decisions.
Speaking of data, this book also talks about the power of those learner personas we discussed earlier.
Ah, yes. Our fictional friends.
They really are so helpful. They help us get inside the heads of our learners, understand their needs, their quirks even.
Walk a mile in their shoes.
Precisely. And the book gives some great questions to ask when you're creating your personas. Think about their job roles, their biggest challenges, their comfort level with technology, how they prefer to learn, even their personal interests.
So we're building a whole picture, not just focusing on their professional side.
Right. The book even gives some examples of personas in action. Picture Bert. He's a 43-year-old manager who's been with the company for 6 years. He's tech savvy, loves learning about the latest gadgets, and prefers to squeeze his training in on his phone during his commute home.
I can picture Bert on the train scrolling through his phone, learning new stuff.
Now imagine Apima. She's a 23-year-old admin assistant, fresh out of university. English is her second language, and she prefers face-to-face training where she can ask questions and get immediate feedback.
Okay, so we
have Bert, our tech-savvy commuter, and Apima, our hands-on learner who thrives in that social setting.
Exactly.
And by understanding those needs and preferences, well, we can really tailor our approach.
All right, it shows there's no one-size-fits-all when it comes to learning. Everyone's different.
Absolutely. And the book actually dives into this concept of what marketers call the marketing mix. You might have heard of it, the four P's: product, price, place, and promotion.
Yes. The four P's marketing 101.
It's a really helpful way to think about positioning and promoting our learning programs.
Okay. So how do the four P's translate to the L&D world?
Well, let's start with product. In this case, the product is the learning experience itself, the training program, the course, whatever it is.
So we need to think of ourselves as learning experience designers.
In a way, yes. We need to understand what our learners need and create experiences that are engaging, effective, and actually meet those needs.
So it's not just about delivering content. It's about crafting a whole experience.
Exactly. And just like any good product needs the right price, we need to think about the cost of our learning programs. Can we justify the investment?
So price, in this context, is about making the case that training is worth it.
Exactly. We need to be able to show that return on investment. How are our programs impacting the bottom line?
Show me the money.
Exactly. Then we've got place, which is all about distribution. How are we getting these programs to our learners? Is it through an LMS? in-person workshops, mobile devices.
So we need to choose the right channels, make sure they're easy to access and user-friendly.
Right. And finally, we've got promotion.
This is where I think a lot of L&D folks could really learn from marketers. We often think that just creating great content is enough, but we need to know how to market it too.
You're absolutely right. We need to get people excited about our learning programs.
So think posters, teaser videos, social media campaigns, get the word out.
Exactly. And the book even suggests some free tools to help us with this, like Canva for creating visuals, Bitable for making videos, and Giphy for those fun GIFs.
Love it. Practical tips and free resources.
The book also highlights the importance of gathering what it calls physical evidence. In the L&D world, that might be things like completion rates, data on performance improvements, even stories from learners about how the training has made a difference.
So we're talking about collecting proof that our programs are actually working.
Exactly. And finally, we have process, which is all about the behind-the-scenes stuff, how we actually plan, develop, and deliver our learning programs.
So making sure everything runs smoothly and efficiently.
Exactly. One of the key takeaways from this book is that learning and development doesn't have to be reactive, you know, just taking orders and delivering training.
I'm sensing a call to action here. What are we supposed to be doing instead?
We can be more proactive, more strategic. We can even be a little bit marketing savvy.
I'm all in. Let's ditch those one and done events and create more engaging learning campaigns.
That's the spirit. And the book even gives a great example of a drip campaign designed for onboarding new hires.
Ooh, drip campaigns. I've heard they're really effective in marketing.
They are. The basic idea is to send out a series of messages over time, usually emails, to nurture relationships and keep people engaged.
So you stay top of mind and provide value on an ongoing basis.
Exactly. In an onboarding context, it might start with a welcome email. You know, introducing key information.
Like a virtual handshake.
Exactly. And then over the next few weeks or months, you can send emails that introduce new concepts, offer helpful resources, highlight aspects of the company culture, even connect new hires with mentors.
This is brilliant. Creating that sense of community from day one.
And you can even personalize those emails based on their role, department, or learning style.
Wow. It's like a personal onboarding concierge. Amazing.
And one of the best things about drip campaigns is that they can be automated. Once you set it up, it runs on its own.
Set it and forget it.
Well, not completely. You still need to track the results and make adjustments, see how people are engaging.
Always testing, always improving.
Speaking of improving, these sources also offer some great insights on workflow learning and how to use it to boost skill development.
Workflow learning. I haven't heard that term before.
One of the sources, Beyond Competencies, challenges us to, you know, really rethink how we approach developing skills.
Okay, I'm ready to rethink things. What do they suggest?
They argue that the traditional model classroom training followed by on-the-job application just isn't enough anymore, especially in today's fast-paced world.
So we need to find ways to support learning that happens right in the flow of work.
Exactly. That's where workflow learning comes in.
Okay, so what exactly is workflow learning?
It's about embedding learning directly into the workflow, so employees can easily access it right when they need it while they're actually doing their jobs.
So learning is part of the workday, not a separate event.
Exactly. And one of the key tools for this is the digital coach.
A digital coach? I'm picturing a tiny AI assistant on my shoulder whispering advice in my ear.
Not quite, but kind of. It's a curated set of resources available on demand to support employees. Things like job aids, checklists, videos, articles, even access to experts.
It's like a personalized knowledge base right at your fingertips.
That's it. And the source actually outlines a whole methodology for designing and implementing these digital coaches. They call it the Enable Design methodology.
Interesting. How does it work?
Well, you start by analyzing the workflow. They use a tool called the Rapid Workflow Analysis, or RWA.
So you're mapping out all the steps involved in a task.
Exactly. And then they use another tool, the Critical Impact of Failure Analysis, or CIF, to see what could go wrong at each step.
So figure out which steps are most important and where mistakes would have the biggest consequences.
You got it. And once you understand the workflow and the potential risks, you can start designing your digital coach to provide the right support.
Very strategic and practical.
And the source makes it clear the digital coach is supposed to work with traditional training, not replace it.
So it's a blended approach, combining the best of both worlds.
Exactly. One of the interesting things about these sources is how much they emphasize connecting different areas of expertise, linking L&D with marketing, neuroscience, and more.
I love that. We can learn so much from each other when we break down those silos.
Absolutely. And one of the best examples of this is design thinking, which we talked about a bit earlier.
Right. Can you remind me how that applies to L&D?
Design thinking is all about solving problems, but with a focus on people. It's about empathy, experimentation, trying things out, and refining as you go.
And in the L&D world, our users are our learners.
Exactly. One of the sources, The Intersection of Design Thinking and Generative AI is Genius, gives a really good overview of how design thinking can be applied to designing learning experiences.
So what are the key principles?
They lay out a 5-stage process: empathize, define, ideate, prototype, and test.
5 stages.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what happens in each stage?
The first stage, empathize, is all about understanding your learners. This is where those personas come in handy. We need to gather insights into their needs, goals, pain points, and their context.
Walking in their shoes, Seeing things from their perspective.
Exactly. Once we have a good understanding of our learners, we move to the define stage, where we clearly state the problem we're trying to solve.
So set a clear goal for the whole design process.
Exactly. Then we move on to ideate, which is all about brainstorming solutions.
This is where the creative juices start flowing.
No idea is too crazy at this stage. And then we move to prototype, where we create a rough draft or a mock-up of our solution.
So we're making it tangible, something we can actually test.
Exactly. And finally, we move to test, where we get feedback from our learners and make adjustments based on their input.
So it's a cycle, always testing and refining.
Exactly. And one of the key takeaways from this source is that design thinking isn't a linear process, you know, step one, step two, step three. You might find yourself going back and forth between stages as you learn and get new ideas.
So it's flexible and adaptable. I like that.
Exactly. And the source says this human-centered approach is especially important when we're designing AI-powered learning solutions.
Makes sense. We don't want to build AI tools that are too complicated or frustrating for people to use.
Right. And speaking of AI, this source also has some tips for using design thinking to create better prompts for generative AI tools.
Oh, yeah. Generative AI. I'm really fascinated by it, but still figuring out how to use it effectively. What kind of tips did they give?
It basically comes down to 3 key questions. What problem are you trying to solve with your prompt? What does a good solution look like? And how can you test and refine your prompt to get the best possible results?
So be clear about your goal. Have a vision. And be willing to experiment.
Exactly. And this design thinking approach can be used for everything in learning design, not just AI prompts.
It's really a mindset shift, being more learner-centric, iterative, and data-driven in everything we do.
Exactly. And, you know, this has sparked a question in my mind.
Ooh, a thought-provoking question.
Yeah.
Lay it on me.
What if we applied the principles of behavioral economics to learning and development?
Behavioral economics. I'm not sure I'm familiar with that.
It's a fascinating field. It looks at how people make decisions. And a lot of times those decisions aren't as rational as we might think.
Okay, I see where you're going. Our learners aren't always perfectly rational either.
Exactly. There's a lot of research on things like cognitive biases, you know, mental shortcuts our brains take. Understanding these biases could be really helpful when designing learning.
So, for example, we could use loss aversion. The idea that people are more afraid of losing something than they are excited about gaining something to encourage people to take a training program.
Exactly. We could frame the message around what they might miss out on if they don't participate.
Interesting. That plays into how our brains naturally work.
And we could also leverage social proof. People are more likely to do something if they see others doing it, especially their peers. We can use that to build community and encourage peer learning.
So if people see their colleagues participating in a training and benefiting, they'll be more likely to join in.
Exactly. It's about understanding human behavior and using it to create more effective learning experiences.
This has been such a fascinating deep dive. I'm seeing learning and development in a whole new light.
I'm glad to hear that. And before we wrap up, I have one final thought-provoking question.
Okay, I'm ready. What is it?
What if, instead of just focusing on delivering information, we focused on designing experiences that spark curiosity, creativity, and a love of lifelong learning?
Wow. That's powerful. It's about going beyond just giving people knowledge. It's about creating a transformation.
Exactly. What if our goal was to help people become lifelong learners? Curious, creative, always exploring new ideas.
I love that vision. Learning shouldn't feel like a chore. It should be something we enjoy.
And imagine the amazing things we could accomplish if everyone had that kind of curiosity and creativity.
This deep dive has been so inspiring. I'm leaving with a ton of ideas and a renewed sense of excitement about the power of learning.
That's what it's all about. We hope this episode has sparked some new ideas for you too. Remember, you don't have to do everything at once.
Start small, experiment, find what works for your learners and your organization.
And as you're designing those learning experiences, keep that marketing mindset in mind.
How would I approach this if I were a marketer? That's such a great question to ask. It forces you to see your learners as your customers.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, we want to create learning experiences that people are excited about, something they'll tell their colleagues and friends about.
Yes, creating that buzz around learning and development, making it something people actually want to do.
This has been a great deep dive, and we hope it's inspired you to think differently about the world of learning and development.
I'm definitely feeling inspired. I can't wait to start putting these ideas into action.
And we can't wait to see what you create. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. It really is about nurturing that love of learning, making it something we're always doing, you know, part of our lives.
Yeah, I love that.
And, you know, these sources, they're full of examples of companies actually doing that. They're using all sorts of creative approaches, gamification, personalized learning paths, social learning platforms, all kinds of stuff to make learning more engaging and fun.
I really am starting to see L&D differently now. It's not just about checking boxes and sitting through boring presentations anymore. It's about creating experiences that actually mean something, you know, that can really change people.
Exactly. It's about giving people the power to own their learning and development.
This whole deep dive has given me so much to think about. I'm already thinking about how I can use these ideas in my own work.
That's great. And remember, you don't have to do everything at once.
Right. Start small, try things out, and adjust as you go. Find what works best for your learners and your organization.
Exactly. And don't forget about that marketing mindset we talked about.
Right, right. Always asking, how would I do this if I were marketing a product or service? It makes you see your learners in a whole new light. They're your customers.
Exactly. Because ultimately, we want to create learning experiences that people are excited about, something they'll rave about to their colleagues, their friends, you know?
Yeah. Getting people excited about L&D, making it something people actually want to be part of.
Well, this has been a really fantastic deep dive, and we hope it's given you some new ideas to play with.
I know it has for me.
Great. Remember, you don't have to implement everything all at once.
Right. Start small, experiment, and find what works best for you and your learners.
Exactly. And as you're designing those learning experiences, don't forget that question. How would I approach this if I were a marketer? Such a good question. It's really about seeing learning and development from a whole new perspective. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been our pleasure. Thanks for listening.
Nationally yours and all things innovation and imagination. That's our show, folks. Good day, good luck, and goodbye.